8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast. Whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
99. This week on the Radio Art Hour, pirate radio is our theme, as we'll hear Gene Shepherd tell us how to steal a radio station. Max Headroom will bust in on Chicago television. Les Paul will set up a radio station in New York, and we'll hear how the video freaks told us to steal this radio in Abby Hoffman's book. Stay tuned to hear all about pirate radio on this week's Radio Art Hour from Wave Farm in New York. Here's a 1964 clip from WOR in New York City, Gene Shepherd talking about stealing a radio station.
Well, I was working in a radio station and TV station out in the Midwest, Cincinnati, as a matter of fact. And at the time, I was going to college and so on. And I was usually around the station at night. And it so happened that a couple of young guys got to hanging around. And they were about my age, and they'd hang around, and they were fascinated by this. And they'd look goggle-eyed in the control room, and they got to know the engineers, and they would run out and get sandwiches for them and so on. And they got to be sort of part of the scene. You just kind of accepted them there. And you'd see them, and you'd say hello to them, and that was about it. And once in a while, there'd be a little discussion on how to get in radio. But it was obvious that these guys absolutely were dedicated. They were going to get into radio. They were going to get into radio and television, and they were really involved. Well, about 6 or 7 months went by like this. And one day, they stopped coming in. And one thing led to the next, and we were all wondering about it. And then nobody thought any more about it, and that was the end of it. And months went by. But strange things started to happen in radio stations in that area. Very strange things. A small radio station in an Ohio town about 30 or 40 miles north of Cincinnati had a transmitter way out in a cornfield someplace. And it was what they call a daytime station. You know, the station goes on the air when dawn comes up, and it goes off the air when the darkness hits. Well, one day, the boys came to work about 7:30 in the morning to turn the station on the air, and the transmitter was gone. Somebody had stolen the transmitter during the night. Well, this was, you know, this is a kind of horse thievery. This is a kind of rustling that I'll tell you, you know, it makes you stop and think. There's not many things you can do with a 1,000-watt AM transmitter. There really aren't. You know, you can't play records through it. You can't use it as a refrigerator or a hat rack. There's the only thing you can do is put it on 12:30 on the dial and hope for some commercials to come in. Well, it was gone, the transmitter. And, of course, there's a little excitement, a little ripple in town. you know, all around the radio station, crying out loud. You hear about what happened to W. Whoopi over there, you know? Well, it's good enough for them, rotten programming. So, well, they were off the air about 3 or 4 weeks while their new transmitter arrived. Well, then that died down for a while. Of course, a little excitement. Naturally, the detectives were put on it, but they couldn't discover anything. And a few months later, suddenly, without the masked writer struck again. Another radio station, this time in another town just outside of Cincinnati, again a daytime station. They came in to work one day, and their Raytheon console and 2 turntables and 4 microphones had disappeared. Boom! Cleaned out, just like that. Well, now let me tell you, a Raytheon console for a 1,000-watt station is a pretty big piece of equipment. It's about 6 feet, wouldn't you say, Ed, about like that? Probably weighs a half a ton with its associated desk equipment and 2 big RCA turntables and 4 or 5 great big Western Electric mics with the booms. The whole jazz disappeared, just like that. Well, of course, by now, people began to piece these things together. They said, for crying out loud, what do you think of this? This is an insane story, you know. Wow, you know. And automatically, there were a lot of little shyster surplus dealers that were beginning to get strange visits from guys with black suits, you know, and snap-brim hats, who had bulges under their elbows, you know, and had the unmistakable look of fuzz about them. And they're down there, are you got any microphones? Yeah, turntable. Well, nothing. They turn up nothing. And then, finally, the real blast hit. A radio station right in town, right in the middle of Cincinnati, was one of these stations that was on till midnight, something like that, and they would sign off, and they would go on the air at 5 o'clock in the morning. Most radio stations sign off around 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And this station was right smack in the heart of town. And she signed off one morning about 1 a.m., ready to go on again at 5, and there was a maintenance man there, and he fooled around a little bit, and apparently, you know, he would take a nap, and he would do a little work, and then he would go down and have coffee. Well, this maintenance man went down and had his coffee, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, he came back up, and he dusted things up a little bit, you know, and he's walking around and kind of, you know, just getting things underway and walking around back and forth. When the crew started to come in, and the engineer who was on duty, a bellow of rage out of the control room, somebody had stolen the audio bay. A 6-foot audio bay. Boom! Just like that. Oh! You know, this is a fantastic thievery. You can't believe it. Well, this, of course, by now, the whole town is agog. You know, all the radio community is wild. This is an insane kind of rustling. You never heard of anything like it. And then people began to call up and compare notes. And they found that things like cabling had disappeared. Different radio stations were talking. Yeah, one radio station had like 795 records taken one night, you know, LPs and stuff like that, back and forth. And they began to realize that a sneaky, clandestine radio station was being assembled somewhere. It really was being assembled. Well, in the middle of the afternoon, on a quiet fall day, without any warning, a loud hum came on the low end of the band and went off. And there was a silence. And, of course, immediately the FCC starts to move in. And about 6 hours later, they closed in on a Quonset hut. A little Quonset hut that had been used as a silo on the outskirts of Cincinnati, and the squad cars pulled up with all the DF equipment, you know, and they saw those darkened windows with burlap tacked over them, and they could hear sounds in there, you know, like hammering and stuff and talking. And they slowly crept up and whipped out their 45s. All right, you guys, up! And there were our 2 young radio men, surrounded with $45,000 worth of radio equipment, and they were all prepared to go on the air with their own radio station. They even had signs that said, on the air, you know. They had logbooks that they had stolen. They had the mics all set up, and they had packed beaver board all around. They had built themselves a little studio. They had their control booms there and their mics. They even had, you know, the shades that the jazzy gist jockeys wear, a couple of guys had grown beards, and they had a girlfriend of theirs sitting out in the front to take calls from the commercials. They caught the whole kit and caboodle of them. And they had run a wire out to the telephone pole and back, number 12 wire, and somehow they tuned up this 1,000-watt transmitter and got it vaguely on the air. And there they were sitting, and no one knew quite what to do. And they began to cry. One guy's 19. He says, "I want to get in the radio. I don't know how to get in." They say, "You got to have experience. How do you get in?" And the other guy, who's 20, says, yeah, "You guys, you always say you got to get experience. Where are you going to get it, for crying out loud?"
It's the Les Paul Show.
Two of America's most fabulous music makers. Now, this couple, they are man and wife, started making records 3 years ago. And since then, they have sold 15 million records. If you started playing their records, if you started and played them one right after another, you'd be lucky to come through in August 2020.
From the 1930s, through his death in 2009, Les Paul, or his given name, Lester William Pulsefus, was known for his own recordings with his wife, Mary Ford, with Chet Atkins, with Bing Crosby, with the Andrew Sisters, with Nat King Cole, and many others. And he's also known for his invention, as he came up with multi-track recording, overdubbing, tape delay, reverb, phase effects, and the solid body electric guitar. So much music over the past century comes from Les Paul's inventions. But one work that doesn't get as much attention that Les Paul did was his work with the Booger Brothers Broadcasting System, an illegal radio station he set up in his Queens apartment building's basement near the furnace room, where he had folks like Benny Goodman, Glenn Miller, Artie Shaw, Jim and Tommy Dorsey, Fred Waring, Lionel Hampton, and others come in and play music on the radio. Unfortunately, Paul's basement radio operation started to jam up communications of air traffic controllers at LaGuardia Airport. An agent from the Federal Communications Commission visited Paul's apartment to shut him down, but they ended up working together to create something called a wave trap, which is a kind of an equalizer that got rid of certain frequencies and harmonics that were messing up signals and causing the problem with the air traffic controllers at LaGuardia. Even earlier than that, the Les Paul Foundation says that in the 1920s, Paul developed his own radio station in his bedroom, creating a radio receiver and using the springs of his bed as an antenna. Later in Wisconsin, he says, quote, "I built my own little broadcasting station there in our home. I built a little one-tube radio transmitter and lengthened the antenna up to the roof so you could hear it all over the block. People would listen to it around the neighborhood and then come over to the house and talk about it," unquote. Of course, what Les Paul did in the 1920s and 1930s would now be called pirate radio. But that term didn't really exist until the 1960s, when ships off of the coast of Britain broadcast radio signals into the country and were called pirates as they were on ships at sea.
What you are saying, lonely guitar, just serenading your song to someone afar, someone feel you belong to. I know how you feel, oh, strings made of steel. Though love is gone, still you must play on. Lonely guitar, sad song your heart sings. Lonely guitar, playing your song on my heartstrings.
Next, we hear from actress Lucille Ball, who tells Dick Cavett about picking up some illegal radio signals in her mouth and doing her part to end World War II.
Good for you. There's a story you once told, and it had to do with World War II.
And you were once... I know the one about the dentist.
Yes, this thing
true.
Is stranger than fiction.
Well, it's true. To make it short, I had some dental work to be done. You know, they put in temporary fillings.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never had it done before. What is it, lead?
I think in those days they were putting in temporary lead fillings.
Yeah. It was quite a while ago.
During the war?
Yeah. And
World War II.
Yes. And I had several, upper and lower. And I went to work that day, and I got home very late. And it was, I don't remember what year, but it was after they had taken the Japanese out of California and unfortunately put them in the camps, which was a very sad time in California. And we were all on our guard, you know, about many things. There had been a Japanese submarine sighted in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. And a Japanese fighter plane had been sighted going over our home one evening. It was touchy times. Anyway, this particular night was about 1:15, and I was driving alone. I had 35 miles to drive, and it wasn't any fun. It was just a normal night. I wasn't frightened or anything. I was just driving along, and a road that I'd taken many times, and all of a sudden, I heard music, but I mean with a great beat, you know, and I looked down to turn off my radio, and it wasn't on. And I turned around and looked to see if there's anyone behind me, and the music was getting louder and louder and louder, and I realized it was in my mouth, and it was beating in my ears. I could hear the tune and everything. I recognized the tune, and then it started to fade out.
Yeah.
Oh, what the hell was that? You know, what could it possibly be? And I didn't know what it was. So the next day I mentioned it at the studio to Buster Keaton. And he said, what street were you on? Moore Park? And I said, yes. He said, you went by the radio station. You picked it up. Well, you got any fillings? I said, yes. He said, you picked it up in your teeth. Well, I could hardly wait to go by there again. And I didn't go by at the same time of night, so nothing happened. Right. There was no music playing, but I could hardly wait.
Call in a request.
Right. But about 5 nights later, because I had to wait, I don't know, a couple weeks for those teeth that were getting fixed, I was going up another street, almost home, and I was passing 4 vacant lots that were all raised so they could build the Birmingham Hospital. And as I went by there, I heard... I'm picking it up with my teeth.
You mean...
Yes. And I stopped the car. Then I looked around. The Morse code, like. And I backed the car up, and it got stronger and stronger, and I kept on backing it up until it really got strong, and my whole jaw was vibrating, like this. And then I got the hell out of there. I went boom, like this, because it was very late. And I couldn't wait to get back to MGM the next morning and tell the security office, and they found an underground Japanese transmitting
radio station.
Honest to God.
That is, is that a great story?
But then they just found it was one of the gardeners calling one of his friends.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
No,
but they
true.
Really, yeah. And they captured them, and they, you helped?
I don't know what happened to them. I just turned it over.
Let's have a look at those teeth that helped win the war.
Professor, I don't see how a smack in the jaw could turn him into a radio.
Well, he's not a radio skipper. He's merely a simple form of receiver. You see, the high-frequency sound waves are emanating from the molar, which is pushed against...
Never mind all the technicalities, Professor. The thing I'm getting at is I've been belted many times before, but the only thing that ever came out of my mouth was a loose tooth.
From what I've been able to see, one of Gilligan's molars has been jolted out of position and shoved against a tooth with a silver filling. Open, Gilligan.
This is station KALU, Honolulu, the voice of Pineapple.
Close. Not too unusual a situation. It's happened a number of times.
Yes, but not to Gilligan.
Well, the atmospheric conditions, the metal in his mouth, the shape of his skull have all combined to make him a receiver.
Is there any chance, Professor, instead of being a receiver, could we make him a sender so we could get a message to Hawaii?
No, I'm afraid not, Skipper. And unless I miss my guess, the position of his head and his body will bring in different stations. Watch. Open up, Gilligan.
Solid steel shower head.
Very
careful,
Well, I'll be darned.
Gilligan, your tooth may go back into position by itself, or perhaps I'll have to find a non-conductive substance to coat it with. Or maybe I'll pull the tooth. Well, you make the decision. I have to keep checking these weather reports.
What's the latest on the typhoon?
Still headed this way.
Which is bearing down on the southwest Pacific area is...
Gilligan, will you close your mouth?
And there will be hourly reports from this station.
You are going to have to stay away from this transistor radio, Gilligan. The signals you're emitting are loud enough to cause interference.
Well, I'll take him over and show the girls. Wouldn't it be wonderful if our little buddy could be turned into a color TV?
Yes, ma'am. This is Dennis Oliver.
Yes, you called and hung up on me.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. I got disconnected somewhere. Yes, ma'am. I had a question for you, hoping maybe you could help me with something. I don't have no dentist up here in this area. I just moved up here from Houston, Texas. And before I left down there, I had some gold and a silver teeth was put in my mouth, you know. And lately, when I lay down at night, this may sound crazy,
but it starts to hurt?
No, I can hear a radio station.
I don't know anything about that one. Honest to God, I've never heard of that.
You hadn't?
No, sir. I
really can't.
Fun. I really hadn't heard it.
No, yes, ma'am. But I mean, I'll tell you what now. Seriously.
You really can't hear? Are the two teeth right side by side?
Yes, ma'am. They're right side by side. And I'll tell you what, my old lady says she can't hear it or nothing, but I can't even go to sleep for it. You ever heard anything like that?
No, but let me go ask Dr. Rector.
Well, just a minute. I don't want you to bother him. I just want to ask you a couple of things. Because I know this sounds crazy. She says she can't hear them. And I called two dentists down there in Houston before I left. The one that did it was out of town. And he said, of course, the lady worked for him to act like she thought I was crazy or something. And I called another one I didn't know, and they act like they thought I was crazy. But really, it's been like 1992 since I was ever in any kind of, had any kind of mental problems or anything. But I'm all right now. But I was wondering, you think like when I talk, that people could hear me on the radio? When I'm talking?
I don't have any idea. The only thing that you might be experiencing,
yes, ma'am,
is what they call galvanic shock.
Galveston.
Galvanic?
Galvanic.
Shock. And that's where you have two different types of metal side by side.
Yes, ma'am.
Rubbing together.
Uh-huh.
And that can cause something called galvanic shock.
Galvanic shock.
Yes, sir. But as far as anything else, I have never heard of anything else. I'm not saying it doesn't. I'm just saying I've never heard of it.
Wait.
But I do know that you can get galvanic shock, and it'll make you feel like if you've ever taken your fork and stuck it accidentally into one of your fillings, and how it makes you just sharp pain.
Yes, ma'am.
Now that I can, and it could be what you're experiencing is galvanic shock, but I've just never heard of it in that form before.
Well, it won't, you said shock, it won't eventually get where it electrocutes you or
no,
something,
sir,
like that, pick
no,
up
sir,
a spark
no,
off
sir,
or something.
It'll just be, it'll just be, have you ever bit down on something on a fork and it would shock your mouth because you hit a feeling with that?
Yes, ma'am, I know what you mean.
Well, that's the only thing that you'll be experiencing, as far as I know.
You don't think there's no way y'all could stop this from doing this, though?
That's why I'm saying, let me go and ask Dr. Rector. I don't
okay. But I tell you, while you're in there, would you ask him this in? If he can't stop it altogether, you know, at least reckon if he could just put it on a different radio station or something. You know, I don't particularly like the kind of music it's playing, you know.
Well, I don't think we can do that, sir.
You don't?
No, sir.
Drei, vier, acht, vier, fünf, zwei, fünf, acht, sieben, drei, acht, vier, fünf, sechs, vier, acht, neun, vier, neun, ein, neun, sieben, drei, fünf, neun, sechs, fünf, ein, fünf, fünf, drei, drei, fünf, sechs, sechs, fünf, sieben, vier, neun.
So this is the original text from Guerrilla Broadcasting from Abbie Hoffman Steele, this book, I guess, with research done by Perry Teasdale from the Columbia paper. Under FCC low power transmission regulations, it is legal to broadcast on the AM band without even obtaining a license, if you transmit with 100 milliwatts of power or less on a free band space that doesn't interfere with a licensed station. You are further allowed up to a 12-foot antenna or the use of carrier current transmission, regular electric wall outlets. Using this legal setup, you can broadcast from a 2 to 20 block radius, depending on how high up you can locate your antenna and the density of tall buildings in the area. Carrier current broadcasting consists of plugging the transmitter into a regular wall socket. It draws power in the same way as any other electrical appliance and feeds its signal into the power line, allowing the broadcast to be heard on any AM radio tuned into the operating frequency. The transmitter can be adjusted to different frequencies until a clear band is located. The signal will travel over the electrical wiring until it hits a transformer, where it will be erased. The trouble with this method is that in large cities, almost every large office or apartment building has a transformer. You should experiment with this method first, but if you are in a city, chances are you'll need an antenna rigged up on the roof. Anything over 12 feet is illegal, but practice has shown that the FCC won't hassle you if you don't have commercials and refrain from interfering with licensed broadcast. There are some cats in Connecticut broadcasting illegally with a 100-foot antenna over a 30-mile radius for hours on end, and nobody gives them any trouble. Naturally, if you insist upon using dirty language, issuing calls to revolution, broadcasting bombing information, interfering with above-ground stations, and becoming too well-known, the FCC is going to try to knock you out. There are penalties that have never been handed out of up to a year in jail. It's possible you could get hit with a conspiracy rap, which could make it a felony. But the opinion of the movement lawyers now is a warning if you're caught once, and a possible fine with stiffer penalties possible for repeaters that are caught. If it gets really heavy, you could still broadcast for up to 15 minutes without being pinpointed by the FCC sleuths. By locating your equipment in a panel truck and broadcasting from a fixed roof antenna, you can make it almost impossible for them to catch you by changing positions. There has been a variety of transmitting equipment used, and the most effective has been found to be an AM transmitter manufactured by Low Power Broadcasting Company, 520 Lincoln Highway, Fraser, Pennsylvania, called Dick Crompton. The right transmitter will run about $200. If you plan to use carrier current transmission, you also need a capacitor that sells for $30. An antenna can be made out of an aluminum tubing and antenna wiring available at any TV radio supply store. See
You'll also need a good microphone that you can get for about $10. Naturally, equipment for heavier broadcasting is available if a member of your group has a license or good connections with someone who works in a large electronics supply house. Also, with a good knowledge in the area, you can build a transmitter for a fraction of the purchase price. You can always employ tape recorders, turntables, and other broadcasting hardware depending on how much bread you have, how much stuff you have to hide, how legal your operation is, and the type of broadcasting you want to do. It is possible to extend your range by sending a signal over the telephone lines to other transmitters, which will immediately rebroadcast. Several areas in a city could be linked together, and even from one city to another. Theoretically, if enough people rig up transmitters and antennas at proper locations, and everyone operates on the same band, it is possible to build a nationwide people's network that is equally theoretically legal. Broadcasting, it should be remembered, is a one-way transmission of information. Communications which allow you to transmit and receive are illegal without a license. That's ham radio. There are a number of outlaw radio projects going on around the country. Less frequent, but just as feasible, is a people's television network. Presently, there are three basic types of TV systems. Broadcast, which is the sending of signals directly from the station's transmitter to home receiver sets. Cable, where the cable company employs extremely sensitive antenna to pick up broadcast transmissions and relay them and or they originate and send them. And thirdly, closed-circuit TV, such as the surveillance cameras in the supermarkets, banks, and apartment house lobbies. The third system, as used by the pigs, is of little concern unless we are interested in not being photographed. Cameras can be temporarily knocked out of commission by flashing a bright light bulb, flash bulb, cigarette lighter, directly in front of its lens. For our own purposes, closed-circuit TV can be employed for broadcasting rallies, rock concerts, or teach-ins to other locations. The equipment is not that expensive to rent and easy to operate. Just contact the largest television or electronics store in your area and ask about it. There are also closed-circuit and cable systems that work in harmony to broadcast special shows to campuses and other institutions. Many new systems are being developed and will be in operation soon. Cable systems, as such, are in use only in a relatively few areas. They can be tapped either at the source or at any point along the cable by an engineer freak who knows what to do. The source is the best spot, since all the amplification and distribution equipment of the system is available at that point. Tapping along the cable itself can be a lot hairier, but more frustrating for the company when they try to trace you down. Standard broadcasting that is received on almost all living room sets works on an RF radio frequency signal sent out on various frequencies which correspond to the channels on the tuner. In no area of the country are all these channels used. This raises important political questions as to why people do not have the right to broadcast on unused channels. By getting hold of a TV camera, Sony and Panasonic are the best for the price, that has an RF output, you can send pictures to a TV simply by placing the camera cable on or near the antenna of the receiver set. When the set is operating on the same channel as the camera, it will show what the camera sees. Used videotape recorders such as the Sony CV series that record and play back audio and video information are becoming more available. These two can be easily adapted to send RF signals the same as a live camera. Whether or not the program to be broadcasted is live or on tape, there are three steps to be taken in order to establish a people's TV network. First, you must convert the video and audio signals to an RF frequency modulated FM signal corresponding to the desired broadcast channel. We suggest for political and technical reasons that you pick one of the unused channels in your area to begin experimenting. The commercial stations have an extremely powerful signal and can usually override your small output. Given time and experience, you might want to go into the direct competition with the big boys on their own channel. It is entirely possible, say, in a 10 to 20 block radius, to interrupt a presidential press conference with more important news. Electronic companies such as Gerald Electronics in Philadelphia make equipment that can RF both video and audio information onto specific channels. The device you'd be interested in is called a cable driver or RF modulator. When the signal is in the RF state, it is already possible to broadcast very short distances. The second step is to amplify the signal so it will reach as far as possible. A linear amplifier of the proper frequency is required for this job. The stronger the amplifier, the farther and more powerful the signal. A 10-watt job will cover approximately 5 miles line of sight in area. Linear amplifiers are not that easily available, but they can be constructed with some electrical engineering knowledge. The third step is the antenna, which, if the whole system is to be mobile to avoid detection, is going to involve some experimentation and possible camouflage. Two things to keep in mind about an antenna are that it should be what is technically referred to as a dipole antenna, and since TV signals travel on line of sight, it is important to place the antenna as high as possible. Although it hasn't been done in practice, it certainly is possible to reflect pirate signals off an existing antenna of a commercial network. This requires a full knowledge of broadcasting. However, any amateur can rig up an antenna, attach it to a helium balloon, and get it plenty high. For most, the roof of a tall building will suffice. If you're really uptight about your operation, the antenna can be hidden with a fake cardboard chimney. We realize becoming TV gorillas is not everyone's trip, but a small band with a few grand can indeed pull it off. There are a lot of technical freaks hanging around recording studios, guitar shops, hi-fi stores, and engineering schools that can be turned on to the project. By showing them the guidelines laid out here, they can help you assemble and build various components that are difficult to purchase, i.e. the linear amplifier. Naturally, by building some of the components, the cost of the operation is kept way down. Equipment can be purchased in selective electronic stores. You'll need a camera, VTR, RF modulator, linear amplifier, and antenna. Also a generator, voltage regulator, and an alternator if you want the station to be mobile. One of the best sources of information on both television and radio broadcasting is the Radio Amateur's Handbook, published by the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut. The handbook gives a complete course in electronics and the latest information on all techniques and equipment related to broadcasting. Back issues have easy-to-read do-it-yourself TV transmitter diagrams and instructions. Also available is a publication called Radical Software, put out by Raindance Corp., 24 East 22nd Street in New York, with the latest info on all types of alternative communications. Guerrilla TV is the vanguard of the communications revolution, rather than the avant-garde cellophane light shows and the weekend conferences. One pirate picture on the sets in America's living rooms is worth 1,000 wasted words. With the fundamentals in this field mastered, you can rig up all sorts of stuff. Cheap $20 tape recorders can be purchased and outfitted with a series of small loudspeakers. Concealed in a school auditorium or other large hall, such a system can blast out any message or music you wish to play. The administration will go insane trying to locate the operation if it is well hidden. We know two cats who rigged a church with this type of setup and a timing device. Right in the middle of the sermon, on came Radio Heaven and said stuff like, "Come on, preacher, this is God, you don't believe all that stuff now, do you?" It made for an exciting Sunday service, all right. You can build a miniature transmitter and with a small magnet attach it to the underbelly of a police car to keep track of where it's going. This would only be practical in a small town or on a campus where there are only a few security guards or patrol vehicles. If you rigged a small tape recorder to the transmitter and tuned it to a popular AM band, the patrol car as it rode around could actually broadcast the guerrilla message you pre-recorded. Wouldn't they be surprised when they found out how you did it? You can get a bumper beeper and receiver that are constructed by professionals for use by private detectives. The dual unit costs $400. You can talk to John Bomer in Phoenix, Arizona about that. Even though there are laws governing this area of sneaky surveillance, telephone taps, tracking devices, and the like, a number of enterprising firms produce an unbelievable array of electronic hardware that allows you to match Big Brother's ears and eyes. Sugar cube transmitters, tie clasp microphones, phone taps, tape recorders that work in a hollowed-out book, and other brave new world equipment is available from R.B. Clifton in Miami, Florida, the Electrolab Corporation in Statesboro, Georgia, or Tracer Investigative Products from Palm Beach, Florida. And by the way, you can pick up Radio Hanoi on shortwave radio every day from 3 to 3:30 p.m. at 15013 kilocycles on the 19-meter band. That's the Guerrilla Broadcasting chapter from Abby Hoffman's Steal This Book, a reading with research from Perry Teasdale, then a member of the Video Freaks Collective that started a pirate television station and got the transmitter from the Teasdale's contribution to Steal This Book, the Abby Hoffman classic.
Max Headroom is a virtual media personality, a character created by George Stone, Annabelle Jankel, and Rocky Morton. He is portrayed by Matt Frewer and has been featured in multiple films, television shows, and advertising campaigns since his debut in 1985. On November 22, 1987, an example of life imitating art, two Chicago television broadcasts were interrupted, hijacked by unknown perpetrators. On WGN Channel 9 at 9 p.m. for 25 seconds, and then again for about 90 seconds 2 hours later on WTTW Channel 11. Someone wearing a rubber Max Headroom full head mask and sunglasses appeared on screen speaking gibberish about a variety of seemingly disconnected subjects, while behind him a physical piece of corrugated metal rotated in a manner similar to the digital background lines of Max's videos. The interruptions ended with the assailant's exposed hindquarters being struck with a fly swatter, and then, you know, back to the news. To this day, no one has ever been caught, and no one knows who did it.
The video pirates, who managed to scramble Chicago airwaves. The pirates interrupted WGN and WTTW programming with a show of their own. Our Mike Kirsch has more.
Channel 11's Doctor Who was unexpectedly knocked off the TV screen last night by a broadcast pirate disguised as Max Headroom. The wacky and at times perverse TV surprise came shortly after 11 o'clock, lasting about a minute and a half. The same thing happened at WGN's 9 o'clock news broadcast earlier in the evening.
Someone wants to get into your house, they can find a way to do that. And I guess likewise, if someone wants to interfere with your signal, they can find a way to do that.
The FCC says the pirates were able to use stronger microwave signals to override the television signals which are transmitted from the Hancock and Sears towers.
I'd like to inform anybody involved in this kind of thing that there's a maximum penalty of $100,000. 1 year in jail or both.
The broadcast pirate who broke into HBO programming about a year and a half ago and threatened HBO with this message was caught by the FCC and fined $5,000 and was put on 1 year probation. The FCC says the wise guys who pulled off this latest stunt are in very big trouble. Mike Kirsch, the 10 o'clock news.
The FCC says or warns that should the pirates try it again, it will only make it easier for the FCC to track them down.
Finally, we tune in Ralph Lewis, radio artist, and his piece Drive to the Edge, as he drives to the edge of the radio signal, heading in to the radio sunset.
There are places where this broadcast begins to waver. Places
on the road you are on.
Behind buildings.
Underneath bridges.
Bridges,
no. below the momentary
cover of trees.
Each moment,
as you listen,
as you listen and move,
you are finding
points between clarity,
and obscurity.
Where an unstable beauty shimmers.
Drive to the edge where they meet and alertly move as if you were balancing on a wire.
Not beyond it.
Or back into full signal strength as much as possible.
Do this safely,
and with awareness
and respect for others.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route
and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
There are places
where this broadcast begins to waver.
Along the road
behind buildings,
underneath bridges,
below the momentary cover of trees.
Each moment, as you listen and move, you are finding points between clarity
and obscurity. Where an unstable beauty shimmers.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
And alertly move as if you are balancing...
Not on a wire.
Or back into full signal strength as much as possible.
Do this safely and with awareness and respect for others.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route.
And your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
And alertly move as if you were balancing on a wire, not beyond it, or back into full signal strength as much as possible.
Where an unstable beauty shimmers, where this broadcast begins to waver. Each moment, as you listen and move, you are finding points between clarity and obscurity.
Behind buildings, underneath bridges.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
There are places where this broadcast begins to waver.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
Behind buildings.
Places along the road.
Underneath bridges.
You are on.
Below the momentary cover of trees.
Do this safely and with awareness.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route
and
the newly audible signals nestling against them.
There are places where this broadcast begins to waver.
Places on the road you are on.
Behind buildings.
Underneath bridges.
Below the momentary cover of trees.
Each moment, as you listen and move, you are finding points between clarity and obscurity.
Where an unstable beauty shimmers. Drive to the edge where they meet and alertly move as if you were balancing on a wire, not beyond it, or back into full signal strength as much as possible.
Do this safely and with awareness and respect for others.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
There are places where this broadcast begins to waver. Underneath bridges.
Below the momentary cover of trees.
Each moment, as you listen and move, you are finding points between clarity
and obscurity. Where an unstable beauty shimmers.
Drive to the edge where they meet and alertly move as if you are balancing on a wire.
Or back into full signal strength as much as possible.
Do this safely and with awareness and respect for others.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route.
And your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
And As if you are balancing on a wire, where this broadcast begins to waver, each moment as you listen and move, you are finding points between clarity and obscurity.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your roof and the newly audible signals nestling against them.
There are places where this broadcast begins to waver.
Drive to the edge where they meet.
Behind buildings.
Places along the road.
Underneath bridges.
You are on.
Below the momentary cover of truth.
Distinctly
and with awareness.
You and your receiver are surveying the bond between the visible scenes on your route and the newly audible signals nestling against them. Each moment as you live.
Thank you.
Signals waver behind buildings when unstable beauty shifts. Each moment as you listen and move, nestling comes between clarity and obscurity. You are finding where they meet.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.